You lied to us, call it what you will, there was no honor in it. He unfastened his cloak, rolled it up, and put it in the old man's lap. Oscar's eyes grew narrow.
Did that woman offer to take you into service? Are you leaving me for that whore's bed?
I don't know that she is a whore, Dunk said, or a witch, or a poisoner, or none of that. But whatever she may be makes no matter. We're leaving for the hedges, not for Coldmoat.
The ditches, you mean? You're leaving me to prowl in the woods like wolves, to waylay honest men upon the roads?
His hand was shaking. The cup fell from his fingers, spilling wine as it rolled along the floor.
Go, then. Go. I want none of you. I should never have taken you on. Go.
As you say, sir. Dunk beckoned and Egg followed. That last night, Dunk wanted to be as far from Eustace Oscree as he could, so they slept down in the cellar amongst the rest of Standfast's meager host. It was a restless night. Lem and Red-Eyed Pate both snored, the one loudly and the other constantly. Dank vapors filled the cellar, rising through the trap from the deeper vaults below. Dunk tossed and turned on the scratchy bed, drifting off into a half-sleep only to wake suddenly in darkness. The bites he'd gotten in the woods were itching fiercely, and there were fleas in the straw as well.
I will be well rid of this place, well rid of the old man, and Ser Benis and the rest of them.
Maybe it was time that he took Egg back to Summerhall to see his father. He would ask the boy about that in the morning, when they were well away. Morning seemed a long way off, though. Dunk's head was full of dragons, red and black, full of checky lions, old shields, battered boots, full of streams and moats and dams, and papers stamped with the king's great seal that he could not read. And she was there as well, the Red Widow, Rowan of the Coldmoat. He could see her freckled face, her slender arms, her long red braid. It made him feel guilty.
I should be dreaming of Tansel. Tansel Tootall, they called her, but she was not too tall for me.
She had painted arms upon his shield, and he had saved her from the Bright Prince, but she vanished even before the Trial of Seven.
She could not bear to see me die,
Dunk often told himself, but what did he know? He was as thick as a castle wall. Just thinking of the Red Widow was proof enough of that.
Tansel smiled at me, but we never held each other, never kissed, not even lips to cheek.
Rowan at least had touched him.
He had the swollen lip to prove it.
Don't be daft, she's not for the likes of you. She is too small, too clever, and much too dangerous.
Drowsing at long last, Dunk dreamed. He was running through a glade in the heart of Watts Wood, running toward Rowan, and she was shooting arrows at him. Each shaft she loosed flew true and pierced him through the chest, yet the pain was strangely sweet. He should have turned and fled, but he ran toward her instead, running slowly as you always did in dreams, as if the very air had turned to honey. Another arrow came, and yet another. Her quiver seemed to have no end of shafts. Her eyes were gray and green and full of mischief.
Your gown brings out the color of your eyes,
he meant to say to her, but she was not wearing any gown, or any clothes at all. Across her small breasts was a faint spray of freckles, and her nipples were red and hard as little berries. The arrows made him look like some great porcupine as he went stumbling to her feet, but somehow he still found the strength to grab her braid. With one hard yank, he pulled her down on top of him and kissed her. He woke suddenly at the sound of a shout. In the darkened cellar, all was confusion. Curses and complaints echoed back and forth, and men were stumbling over one another as they fumbled for their spears or breeches. No one knew what was happening. Egg found the tallow candle and got it lit to shed some light upon the scene. Dunk was the first one up the steps. He almost collided with Sam Stoops rushing down, puffing like a bellows and babbling incoherently. Dunk had to hold him by both shoulders to keep him from falling.
Sam, what's wrong?
The sky, the old man whimpered. The sky.
No more sense could be gotten from him, so they all went up to the roof for a look. Ser Eustace was there before them, standing by the parapets in his bedrobe, staring off into the distance. The sun was rising in the west. It was a long moment before Dunk realized what that meant.
What's wood is a fire,
he said in a hushed voice. From down at the base of the tower came the sound of Bennis cursing, a stream of such surpassing filth that it might have made Aegon the Unworthy blush. Sam Stoops began to pray. They were too far away to make out flames, but the red glow engulfed half the western horizon, and above the light the stars were vanishing. The king's crown was half gone already, obscured behind a veil of the rising smoke.
Fire and sword, she said.
The fire burned until morning. No one in Standfast slept that night. Before long, they could smell the smoke and see flames dancing in the distance like girls in scarlet skirts. They all wondered if the fire would engulf them. Dunk stood behind the parapets, his eyes burning, watching for riders in the night.
Bennis, he said, when the brown knight came up chewing on his sour leaf. It's you she wants. Might be you should go.
What, run? He brayed. On my horse? Might as well try to fly off on one of these damned chickens.
Then give yourself up. She'll only slit your nose.
I like my nose how it is, Lunk. Let her try and take me. We'll see what gets slit open.
He sat cross-legged with his back against a merlin and took a whetstone from his pouch to sharpen his sword. Ser Eustace stood above him. In low voices they spoke of how to fight the war.
The Long Inch will expect us at the dam, Dunk heard the old knight say. So we will burn her crops instead, fire for fire.
Ser Bennis thought that would be just the thing, only maybe they should put her mill to the torch as well.
It's 6 leagues on to other side of the castle. The Long Inch won't be looking for us there. Burn the mill and kill the miller. That'll cost her dear.
Egg was listening too. He coughed and looked at Dunk with wide white eyes. Ser, you have to stop them.
How? Dunk asked. The Red Widow will stop them. Her and that Lucas the Long Inch. They're only making noise, Egg. It's that or piss their britches, and it's not to do with us now.
Dawn came with hazy gray skies and air that burned the eyes. Dunk meant to make an early start, though after their sleepless night he did not know how far they'd get. He and Egg broke their fast on boiled eggs while Bennis was rousting the others outside for more drill.
They are Oscary men and we are not,
he told himself. He ate 4 of the eggs. Ser Eustace owed him that much, as he saw it. Egg ate 2. They washed them down with ale.
We could go to Fair Isle, Ser, the boy said as they were gathering up their things. If they're being raided by the Iron Men, Lord Farman might be looking for some swords.
It was a good thought.
Have you ever been to Fair Isle?
No, Ser, Egg said. But they say it's fair. Lord Farman's seat is fair, too. It's called Faircastle.
Dunk laughed.
Faircastle it shall be.
He felt as if a great weight had been lifted off his shoulders.
I'll see to the horses, he said,
when he'd tied his armor up in a bundle, secured with hempen rope.
Go to the roof and get our bedrolls, squire.
The last thing he wanted this morning was another confrontation with the Checky Lion.
If you see Ser Eustace, let him be.
I will, Ser.
Outside, Bennis had his recruits lined up with their spears and shields, and was trying to teach them to advance in unison. The brown knight paid Dunk not the slightest heed as he crossed the yard.
He will lead the whole lot of them to death. The Red Widow could be here any moment.
Egg came bursting from the tower door and clattered down the wooden steps with their bedrolls. Above him, Ser Eustace stood stiffly on the balcony, his hands resting on the parapet. When his eyes met Dunk's, his mustache quivered and he quickly turned away. The air was hazy with blowing smoke. Bennis had his shield slung across his back, a tall kite shield of unpainted wood, dark with countless layers of old varnish, and girded all about with iron. It bore no blazon, only a center boss that reminded Dunk of some great eye shut tight.
As blind as he is. How do you mean to fight her?
Dunk asked. Ser Bennis looked at his shoulders, his mouth running red with sour leaf.
Can't hold the hill with so few spears. Got to be the tower. We all hole up inside.
He nodded at the door.
Only one way in. Haul up them wooden steps, and there's no way they can reach us.
Until they build some steps of their own. They might bring ropes and grapnels, too, and swarm down on you through the roof. Unless they just stand back with their crossbows and fill you full of quarrels while you're trying to hold the door.
The melons, beans, and barleycorns were listening to all they said. All their brave talk had blown away, though there was no breath of wind. They stood clutching their sharpened sticks, looking at Dunk and Bennis and each other.
"This lot won't do you a lick of good,"
Dunk said with a nod at the ragged Oskry army.
"The Red Widow's knights will cut them to pieces if you leave them in the open, and their spears won't be any use inside that tower."
"They can chuck things off the roof," said Bennis. "Treb is good at chucking rocks."
"He could chuck a rock or two, I suppose," said Dunk, "until one of the Widow's crossbowmen puts a bolt through him."
"Sir?"
Egg stood beside him.
"Sir, if we mean to go, we'd best be gone, in case the Widow comes."
The boy was right.
"If we linger, we'll be trapped here."
Yet still Dunk hesitated.
"Let them go, Bennis."
"What, lose our valiant lads?"
Bennis looked at the peasants and brayed laughter.
"Don't you lot be getting any notions," he warned them. "I'll gut any man who tries to run."
"Try, and I'll gut you."
Dunk drew his sword.
"Go home, all of you,"
he told the small folk.
"Go back to your villages, and see if the fires spared your homes and crops."
No one moved. The brown knight stared at him, his mouth working. Dunk ignored him.
"Go,"
he told the small folk once again. It was as if some god had put the word into his mouth.
"Not the warrior. Is there a god for fools? Go!"
he said again, roaring it this time.
"Take your spears and shields, but go, or you won't live to see the morrow. Do you want to kiss your wives again? Do you want to hold your children? Go home. Have you all gone deaf?"
They hadn't. A mad scramble ensued amongst the chickens. Big Rob trod on a hen as he made his dash, and Pate came within half a foot of disemboweling Will Bean when his own spear tripped him up. But off they went, running. The melons went one way, the beans another, the barleycorns a third. Sir Eustace was shouting down at them from above, but no one paid him any mind.
"They are deaf to him, at least,"
Dunk thought. By the time the old knight emerged from his tower and came scrambling down the steps, only Dunk and Egg and Bennis remained among the chickens.
"Come back," Sir Eustace shouted at his fast-fleeing host. "You do not have my leave to go. You do not have my leave."
"No use, my lord," said Bennis. "They're gone."
Sir Eustace rounded on Dunk, his mustache quivering with rage.
"You had no right to send them away, no right. I told them not to go. I forbade it. I forbade you to dismiss them."
"We never heard you, my lord,"
Egg took off his hat to fan away the smoke.
"The chickens were cackling too loud."
The old man sank down onto Standfast's lowest step.
"What did that woman offer you to deliver me to her?"
he asked Dunk in a bleak voice.
"How much gold did she give you to betray me, to send my lads away and leave me here alone?"
"You're not alone, my lord."
Dunk sheathed his sword. "I slept beneath your roof and ate your eggs this morning. I owe you some service still. I won't go slinking off with my tail between my legs. My sword's still here." He touched the hilt.
"One sword." The old knight got slowly to his feet. "What can one sword hope to do against that woman?"
"Try and keep her off your land to start with."
Dunk wished he were as certain as he sounded. The old knight's mustache trembled every time he took a breath.
"Yes," he said at last. "Better to go boldly than hide behind stone walls. Better to die a lion than a rabbit. We were the marshals of the North March for 1,000 years. I must have my armor."
He started up the steps. Egg was looking up at Dunk.
"I never knew you had a tail, sir,"
the boy said.
"Do you want a clout in the ear?"
"No, sir. Do you want your armor?"
"That,"
Dunk said.
"And one thing more."
There was talk of Sir Bennis coming with them, but in the end, Sir Eustace commanded him to stay and hold the tower. His sword would be of little use against the odds that they were like to face, and the sight of him would inflame the widow further. The brown knight did not require much convincing. Dunk helped him knock loose the iron pegs that held the upper steps in place. Bennis clambered up them, untied the old gray hempen rope, and hauled on it with all his strength. Creaking and groaning, the wooden stairs swung upward, leaving 10 feet of air between the top stone step and the tower's only entrance. Sam Stoops and his wife were both inside. The chickens would need to fend for themselves. Sitting below on his gray gelding, Sir Eustace called up to say,
"If we have not returned by nightfall, I'll ride for Highgarden, my lord, and tell Lord Tyrell how that woman burned your wood and murdered you."
Dunk followed Egg and Maester down the hill. The old man came after, his armor rattling softly. For once a wind was rising and he could hear the flapping of his cloak. Where Watts Wood had stood, they found a smoking wasteland. The fire had largely burned itself out by the time they reached the wood, but here and there a few patches were still burning, fiery islands in a sea of ash and cinders. Elsewhere, the trunks of burned trees thrust like blackened spears into the sky. Other trees had fallen and lay athwart the west way with limbs charred and broken, dull red fires smoldering inside their hollow hearts. There were hot spots on the forest floor as well, and places where the smoke hung in the air like a hot gray haze. Sir Eustace was stricken with a fit of coughing, and for a few moments Dunk feared the old man would need to turn back, but finally it passed. They rode past the carcass of a red deer, and later on what might have been a badger. Nothing lived, except the flies. Flies could live through anything, it seemed.
"The field of fire must have looked like this," Sir Eustace said. "It was there our woes began, 200 years ago. The last of the Green Kings perished on that field, with the finest flowers of the Reach around him. My father said the dragon fire burned so hot that their swords melted in their hands. Afterward, the blades were gathered up and went to make the Iron Throne. Highgarden passed from kings to stewards, and the Oskrees dwindled and diminished, until the marshals of the North March were no more than landed knights bound in fealty to the Rowans."
Dunk had nothing to say to that, so they rode in silence for a time, till Sir Eustace coughed and said,
"Sir Duncan, do you remember the story that I told you?"
"I might, sir," said Dunk. "Which one?"
"The little lion."
"I remember. He was the youngest of 5 sons.
"Good,"
he coughed again.
"When he slew Lancel Lannister, the Westermen turned back. Without the king, there was no war. Do you understand what I am saying?"
"Aye," Dunk said reluctantly. "Could I kill a woman?" For once, Dunk wished he were as thick as that castle wall. "It must not come to that. I must not let it come to that." A few green trees still stood where the west way crossed the Checky water. Their trunks were charred and blackened on one side. Just beyond, the water glimmered darkly. "Blue and green," Dunk thought, "but all the gold is gone." The smoke had veiled the sun. Sir Eustace halted when he reached the water's edge.
"I took a holy vow. I will not cross that stream. Not so long as the land beyond is hers."
The old knight wore mail and plate beneath his yellowed surcoat. His sword was on his hip.
"What if she never comes, sir?"
Egg asked. "With fire and sword," Dunk thought. "She'll come." She did, and within the hour, they heard her horses first, and then the faint metallic sound of clinking armor growing louder. The drifting smoke made it hard to tell how far off they were, until her banner-bearer pushed through the ragged gray curtain. His staff was crowned by an iron spider painted white and red, with the black banner of the Webbers hanging listlessly beneath. When he saw them across the water, he halted on the bank. Sir Lucas Inchfield appeared half a heartbeat later, armored, head to heel. Only then did Lady Rowan herself appear, astride a coal-black mare decked out in strands of silvery silk, like unto a spider's web. The widow's cloak was made of the same stuff. It billowed from her shoulders and her wrists as light as air. She was armored, too, in a suit of green enamel scale chased with gold and silver. It fit her figure like a glove and made her look as if she were garbed in summer leaves. Her long red braid hung down behind her, bouncing as she rode. Septon Sefton rode red-faced at her side, atop a big gray gelding. On her other side was her young maester, Carrick, mounted on a mule. More knights came after, 6 of them, attended by as many esquires. A column of mounted crossbowmen brought up the rear and fanned out to either side of the road when they reached the Checky water and saw Dunk waiting on the other side. There were 30 fighting men all told, excluding the Septon, the Maester, and the widow herself.
One of the knights caught Dunk's eye, a squat, bald keg of a man in mail and leather, with an angry face and an ugly goiter on his neck. The Red Widow walked her mare to the edge of the water.
"Sir Eustace, Sir Duncan," she called across the stream. "We saw your fire burning in the night."
"Saw it?" Sir Eustace shouted back. "Aye, you saw it, after you made it."
"That is a vile accusation."
"Or a vile act."
"I was asleep in my bed last night with my ladies all around me. The shouts from the walls awoke me, as they did almost everyone. Old men climbed up steep tower steps to look, and babes at the breast saw the red light and wept in fear. And that is all I know of your fire, sir."
"It was your fire, woman," insisted Sir Eustace. "My wood is gone, gone, I say."
Septon Sefton cleared his throat.
"Sir Eustace," he boomed, "there are fires in the King's Wood, too, and even in the Rain Wood. The drought has turned all our woods to kindling."
Lady Rowan raised an arm and pointed.
"Look at my fields, Oscree, how dry they are. I would have been a fool to set a fire. Had the wind changed direction, the flames might well have leapt the stream and burned out half my crops."
"Might have," Sir Eustace shouted. "It was my woods that burned, and you that burned them. Most like you cast some witch's spell to drive the wind, just as you used your dark arts to slay your husbands and your brothers."
Lady Rowan's face grew harder. Dunk had seen that look at Coldmoat just before she slapped him.
"Prattle," she told the old man. "I will waste no more words on you, sir. Produce Bennis of the Brown Shield, or we will come and take him."
"That you shall not do," Sir Eustace declared in ringing tones. "That you shall never do."
His mustache twitched.
"Come no farther. This side of the stream is mine, and you are not wanted here. You shall have no hospitality from me, no bread and salt, not even shade and water. You come as an intruder. I forbid you to set foot on Oscree land."
Lady Rowan drew her braid over her shoulder.
"Sir Lucas," was all she said.
The long inch made a gesture. The crossbowmen dismounted, winched back their bowstrings with the help of hook and stirrup, and plucked quarrels from their quivers.
"Now, sir,"
her ladyship called out, when every bow was knocked and raised and ready.
"What was it you forbade me?"
Dunk had heard enough.
"If you cross the stream without leave, you are breaking the king's peace."
Septon Sefton urged his horse forward a step.
"The king will neither know nor care," he called. "We are all the mother's children, sir. For her sake, stand aside."
Dunk frowned.
"I don't know much of God, Septon, but aren't we the warrior's children, too?"
He rubbed the back of his neck.
"If you try to cross, I'll stop you."
Sir Lucas the Long Inch laughed.
"Here's a hedge knight who yearns to be a hedgehog, my lady," he said to the Red Widow.
"Say the word, and we'll put a dozen quarrels in him. At this distance, they will punch through that armor like it was made of spit."
"No, not yet, sir."
Lady Rowan studied him from across the stream.
"You are two men and a boy. We are 33. How do you propose to stop us crossing?"
"Well," said Dunk, "I'll tell you, but only you."
"As you wish."
She pressed her heels into her horse and rode her out into the stream. When the water reached the mare's belly, she halted, waiting.
"Here I am. Come closer, sir. I promise not to sew you in a sack."
Sir Eustace grasped Dunk by the arm before he could respond.
"Go to her," the old knight said, "but remember the little lion." "As you say, my lord."
Dunk walked Thunder down into the water. He drew up beside her and said,
"My lady."
"Sir Duncan." She reached up and laid two fingers on his swollen lip. "Did I do this, sir?"
"No one else has slapped my face of late, my lady."
"That was bad of me. A breach of hospitality. The good Septon has been scolding me."
She gazed across the water at Sir Eustace.
"I scarce remember Adam any longer. It was more than half my life ago. I remember that I loved him, though. I have not loved any of the others."
"His father put him in the blackberries with his brothers," Dunk said. "He was fond of blackberries."
"I remember. He used to pick them for me, and we'd eat them in a bowl of cream."
The king pardoned the old man for Demon, said Dunk. It is past time you pardoned him for Adam.
Give me Bennis and I'll consider that.
Bennis is not mine to give, she sighed.
I would as lief not have to kill you.
I would as lief not die.
Then give me Bennis. We'll cut his nose off and hand him back, and that will be the end of that.
It won't, though, Dunk said. There's still the dam to deal with and the fire. Will you give us the men who set it?
There were lantern bugs in that wood, she said. It may be they set the fire off with their little lanterns.
No more teasing now, m'lady, Dunk warned her. This is no time for it. Tear down the dam, and let Ser Eustace have the water to make up for the wood. That's fair, is it not?
It might be, if I had burned the wood, which I did not. I was at Coldmoat, safe abed.
She looked down at the water.
What is there to prevent us from riding right across the stream? Have you scattered caltrops amongst the rocks? Hidden archers in the ashes? Tell me what you think is going to stop us.
Me.
He pulled one gauntlet off.
In Fleabottom, I was always bigger and stronger than the other boys, so I used to beat them bloody and steal from them. The old man taught me not to do that. It was wrong, he said, and besides, sometimes little boys have great big brothers. Here, have a look at this.
Dunk twisted the ring off his finger and held it out to her. She had to let loose of her braid to take it. Gold, she said when she felt the weight of it. What is this, Ser? She turned it over in her hand. A signet. Gold and onyx. Her green eyes narrowed as she studied the seal. Where did you find this, Ser?
In a boot, wrapped in rags and stuffed up in the toe.
Lady Rowan's fingers closed around it. She glanced at Egg and old Ser Eustace. You took a great risk in showing me this ring, Ser. But how does it avail us? If I should command my men to cross,
well, said Dunk, that would mean I'd have to fight.
And die,
most like, he said. And then Egg would go back where he comes from and tell what happened here.
Not if he died as well.
I don't think you'd kill a boy of 10, he said, hoping he was right. Not this boy of 10, you wouldn't. You've got 33 men there, like you said. Men talk, that fat one there especially. No matter how deep you dug the graves, the tail would out. And then, well, might be a spotted spider's bite can kill a lion. But a dragon is a different sort of beast.
I would sooner be the dragon's friend. She tried the ring on her finger. It was too big even for her thumb. Dragon or no, I must have Bennis of the Brown Shield.
No.
You are 7 feet of stubborn.
Less an inch.
She gave him back the ring. I cannot return to Coldmoat empty-handed. They will say the Red Widow has lost her bite, that she was too weak to do justice, that she could not protect her small folk. You do not understand, Ser.
I might. Better than you know. I remember once some little lord in the Stormlands took Ser Arlan into service to help him fight some other little lord. When I asked the old man what they were fighting over, he said, "Nothing, lad. It's just some pissing contest."
Lady Rowan gave him a shocked look, but could sustain it no more than half a heartbeat before it turned into a grin. I have heard 1,000 empty courtesies in my time, but you are the first knight who ever said pissing in my presence. Her freckled face went somber. Those pissing contests are how lords judge one another's strength. And woe to any man who shows his weakness. A woman must needs piss twice as hard if she hopes to rule. And if that woman should happen to be small, Lord Stackhouse covets my Horseshoe Hills. Sir Clifford Conklin has an old claim to Leafy Lake. Those dismal Durwells live by stealing cattle, and beneath mine own roof I have the Long Inch. Every day I wake wondering if this might be the day he marries me by force. Her hand curled tight around her braid, as hard as if it were a rope, and she was dangling over a precipice. He wants to, I know. He holds back for fear of my wrath, just as Conklin and Stackhouse and the Durwells tread carefully where the Red Widow is concerned. If any of them thought for a moment that I had turned weak and soft. Dunk put the ring back on his finger and drew his dagger. The widow's eyes went wide at the sight of naked steel. What are you doing? She said. Have you lost your wits? There are 12 crossbows trained on you.
You wanted blood for blood.
He laid the dagger against his cheek.
They told you wrong, It wasn't Bennis cut that digger, it was me.
He pressed the edge of the steel into his face, slashed downward. When he shook the blood off the blade, some spattered on her face.
More freckles, he thought.
There, the Red Widow has her due, a cheek for a cheek.
You are quite mad. The smoke had filled her eyes with tears. If you were better born, I'd marry you.
I'm a lady, and if pigs had wings and scales and breathed flame, they'd be as good as dragons.
Dunk slid the knife back in its sheath. His face had begun to throb. The blood ran down his cheek and dripped onto his gorget. The smell made Thunder snort and paw the water.
Give me the men who burned the wood.
No one burned the wood, she said. But if some man of mine had done so, it must have been to please me. How could I give such a man to you? She glanced back at her escort. It would be best if Sir Eustace were just to withdraw his accusation.
Those pigs will be breathing fire first, m'lady.
In that case, I must assert my innocence before the eyes of gods and men. Tell Sir Eustace that I demand an apology, or a trial. The choice is his. She wheeled her horse about to ride back to her men. The stream would be their battleground. Septon Sefton waddled out and said a prayer, beseeching the Father above to look down on these two men and judge them justly, asking the warrior to lend his strength to the man whose cause was just and true, begging the mother's mercy for the liar, that he might be forgiven for his sins. When the praying was over and done with, he turned to Sir Eustace Oscree one last time. Sir, he said, I beg you once again withdraw your accusation.
I will not,
the old man said, his mustache trembling. The fat septon turned to Lady Rowan. Good sister, if you did this thing, confess your guilt and offer good Sir Eustace some restitution for his wood. Elsewise, blood must flow. My champion will prove my innocence before the eyes of gods and men.
Trial by battle is not the only way, said the septon,
waist deep in the water. Let us go to Golden Grove, I implore you both, and place the matter before Lord Rowan for his judgment.
Never, said Sir Eustace.
The Red Widow shook her head. Sir Lucas Inchfield looked at Lady Rowan, his face dark with fury.
You will marry me when this mummer's farce is done, as your lord father wished.
My lord father never knew you as I do, she gave back. Dunk went to one knee beside Egg and put the signet back in the boy's hand. Four three-headed dragons, two and two, the arms of Maker, Prince of Summerhall.
Back in the boot, he said.
But if it happens that I die, go to the nearest of your father's friends and have him take you back to Summerhall. Don't try to cross the whole reach on your own. See you don't forget, or my ghost will come and clout you in the ear.
Yes, sir, said Egg, but I'd sooner you didn't die.
It's too hot to die.
Dunk donned his helm, and Egg helped him fasten it tightly to his gorget. The blood was sticky on his face, though Sir Eustace had torn a piece off his cloak to help stop the gash from bleeding. He rose and went to Thunder. Most of the smoke had blown away. He saw as he swung up onto the saddle, but the sky was still dark.
Clouds, he thought. Dark clouds.
It had been so long.
Maybe it's an omen. But is it his omen or mine? Dunk was no good with omens.
Across the stream, Sir Lucas had mounted up as well. His horse was a chestnut courser, a splendid animal, swift and strong, but not as large as Thunder. What the horse lacked in size he made up for in armor, though. He was clad in crinet, chanfrin, and a coat of light chain. The Longinch himself wore black enameled plate and silvery ringmail. An onyx spider squatted malignantly atop his helmet, but his shield displayed his own arms, a band sinister, checky black and white, on a pale gray field. Dunk watched Sir Lucas hand it to a squire.
He does not mean to use it.
When another squire delivered him a poleaxe, he knew why. The axe was long and lethal, with a banded haft, a heavy head, and a wicked spike on its back. But it was a two-handed weapon. The Longinch would need to trust in his armor to protect him.
I need to make him rue that choice.
His own shield was on his left arm, the shield Tansel had painted with his elm and falling star. A child's rhyme echoed in his head.
Oak and iron, guard me well, or else I'm dead and doomed to hell.
He slid his longsword from its scabbard. The weight of it felt good in his hands. He put his heels into Thunder's flanks and walked the big destrier down into the water. Across the stream, Ser Lucas did the same. Dunk pressed right so as to present the long inch with his left side, protected by his shield. That was not something Ser Lucas was willing to concede him.
He turned his courser quickly, and they came together in a tumult of gray steel and green spray.
Ser Lucas struck with his poleaxe. Dunk had to twist in the saddle to catch it on his shield. The force of it shot down his arm and jarred his teeth together. He swung his sword in answer, a sideways cut that took the other knight beneath his upraised arm. Steel screamed on steel, and it was on. The long inch spurred his courser in a circle, trying to get around to Dunk's unprotected side, but Thunder wheeled to meet him, snapping at the other horse. Ser Lucas delivered one crashing blow after another, standing in his stirrups to get all his weight and strength behind the axe head. Dunk shifted his shield to catch each blow as it came. Half crouched beneath its oak, he hacked at Inchfield's arms and side and legs, but his plate turned every stroke. Around they went and around again, the water lapping at their legs. The long inch attacked, and Dunk defended, watching for a weakness. Finally he saw it. Every time Ser Lucas lifted his axe for another blow, a gap appeared beneath his arm. There was mail and leather there, and padding underneath, but no steel plate. Dunk kept his shield up, trying to time his attack.
Soon, soon.
The axe crashed down, wrenched free, came up.
Now.
He slammed his spurs into Thunder, driving him closer and thrust with his longsword to drive his point through the opening. But the gap vanished as quick as it had appeared. His sword point scraped a rondel, and Dunk, overextended, almost lost his seat. The axe descended with a crash, slanting off the iron rim of Dunk's shield, crunching against the side of his helm, and striking Thunder a glancing blow along the neck. The destrier screamed and reared up on two legs, his eye rolling white in pain as the sharp, coppery smell of blood filled the air. He lashed out with his iron hooves just as the long inch was moving in. One caught Ser Lucas in the face, the other on a shoulder. Then the heavy warhorse came down atop his courser. It all happened in a heartbeat. The two horses went down in a tangle, kicking and biting at each other, churning up the water and the mud below. Dunk tried to throw himself from the saddle, but one foot tangled in a stirrup. He fell face first, sucking down one desperate gulp of air before the stream came rushing into the helm through the eye slit. His foot was still caught up, and he felt a savage yank as Thunder's struggles almost pulled his leg out of its socket. Just as quickly he was free, turning, sinking. For a moment he flailed helplessly in the water. The world was blue and green and brown. The weight of his armor pulled him down until his shoulder bumped the stream bed.
If that is down, the other way is up.
Dunk's steel-clad hands fumbled at the stones and sands, and somehow he gathered his legs up under him and stood. He was reeling, dripping mud, with water pouring from the breath holes in his dinted helm. But he was standing. He sucked down air. His battered shield still clung to his left arm, but his scabbard was empty and his sword was gone. There was blood inside his helm as well as water. When he tried to shift his weight, his ankle sent a lance of pain right up his leg. Both horses had struggled back to their feet, he saw. He turned his head, squinting one-eyed through a veil of blood, searching for his foe.
Gone, he thought. He's drowned, or Thunder crushed his skull in.
Ser Lucas burst up out of the water, right in front of him, sword in hand. He struck Dunk's neck a savage blow, and only the thickness of his gorget kept his head upon his shoulders. He had no blade to answer with, only his shield. He gave ground, and the long inch came after, screaming and slashing. Dunk's upraised arm took a numbing blow above the elbow. A cut to his hip made him grunt in pain. As he backed away, a rock turned beneath his foot, and he went down to one knee, chest high in the water. He got his shield up, but this time Ser Lucas struck so hard, he split the thick oak right down the middle and drove the remnants back into Dunk's face. His ears were ringing and his mouth was full of blood, but somewhere far away he heard Egg screaming, "Get him, Ser! Get him! Get him! He's right there!" Dunk dived forward. Ser Lucas had wrenched his sword free for another cut. Dunk slammed into him waist high and knocked him off his feet. The stream swallowed both of them again, but this time Dunk was ready. He kept one arm around the long inch and forced him to the bottom. Bubbles came streaming out from behind Inchfield's battered, twisted visor, but still he fought. He found a rock at the bottom of the stream and began hammering at Dunk's head and hands. Dunk fumbled at his sword belt.
"Have I lost the dagger, too?"
he wondered. No, there it was. His hand closed around the hilt and he wrenched it free and drove it slowly through the churning water, through the iron rings and boiled leather, beneath the arm of Lucas the Long Inch, turning it as he pushed. Ser Lucas jerked and twisted and the strength left him. Dunk shoved away and floated. His chest was on fire. A fish flashed past his face, long and white and slender. "What's that?" he wondered. "What's that? What's that?" He woke in the wrong castle. When his eyes opened, he did not know where he was. It was blessedly cool. The taste of blood was in his mouth, and he had a cloth across his eyes, a heavy cloth fragrant with some unguent. It smelled of cloves, he thought. Dunk groped at his face, pulled the cloth away. Above him, torchlight played against a high ceiling. Ravens were walking on the rafters overhead, peering down with small black eyes and quirking at him.
"I am not blind, at least."
He was in a maester's tower. The walls were lined with racks of herbs and potions in earthen jars and vessels of green glass. A long trestle table nearby was covered with parchments, books, and queer bronze instruments, all spattered with droppings from the ravens in the rafters. He could hear them muttering at one another. He tried to sit. It proved a bad mistake. His head swam and his left leg screamed in agony when he put the slightest weight upon it. His ankle was wrapped in linen, he saw, and there were linen strips around his chest and shoulders, too. "Be still." A face appeared above him, young and pinched, with dark brown eyes on either side of a hooked nose. Dunk knew that face. The man who owned it was all in gray, with a chain collar hanging loose about his neck, a maester's chain of many metals. Dunk grabbed him by the wrist.
"Where?"
"Coldmoat," said the maester. "You were too badly injured to return to Standfast, so Lady Rowan commanded us to bring you here. Drink this." He raised a cup of something to Dunk's lips. The potion had a bitter taste, like vinegar, but at least it washed away the taste of blood. Dunk made himself drink it all. Afterward, he flexed the fingers of his sword hand and then the other.
"At least my hands still work and my arms."
"What?
What did I hurt?"
"What not?" the maester snorted. "A broken ankle, a sprained knee, a broken collarbone, bruising. Your upper torso is largely green and yellow, and your right arm is a purply black. I thought your skull was cracked as well, but it appears not. There is that gash in your face, Sarah. You will have a scar, I fear. Oh, and you had drowned by the time we pulled you from the water."
"Drowned?"
said Dunk. "I never suspected that one man could swallow so much water. Not even a man as large as you, Sarah. Count yourself fortunate that I am ironborn. The priests of the drowned god know how to drown a man and bring him back, and I have made a study of their beliefs and customs."
"I drowned."
Dunk tried to sit again, but the strength was not in him.
"I drowned in water that did not even come up to my neck."
He laughed, then groaned in pain.
"Ser Lucas?"
"Dead. Did you doubt it?"
"No."
Dunk doubted many things, but not that. He remembered how the strength had gone out of the Long Inch's limbs all at once.
"Egg." He got out. "I want egg."
"Hunger is a good sign," the maester said. "But it is sleep you need just now, not food." Dunk shook his head and regretted it at once.
"Egg is my squire."
"Is he? A brave lad, and stronger than he looks. He was the one to pull you from the stream. He helped us get that armor off you, too, and rode with you in the wain when we brought you here. He would not sleep himself, but sat by your side with your sword across his lap, in case someone tried to do you harm. He even suspected me, and insisted that I taste anything I meant to feed you. A queer child, but devoted."
"Where is he?"
"Sir Eustace asked the boy to attend him at the wedding feast. There was no one else on his side. It would have been discourteous for him to refuse."
"Wedding feast?"
Dunk did not understand. "You would not know, of course. Coldmoat and Standfast were reconciled after your battle. Lady Rowan begged leave of old Sir Eustace to cross his land and visit Adam's grave, and he granted her that right. She knelt before the blackberries and began to weep, and he was so moved that he went to comfort her. They spent the whole night talking of young Adam and my lady's noble father. Lord Wyman and Sir Eustace were fast friends. Until the Blackfire Rebellion, his lordship and my lady were wed this morning by our good Septon Septon. Eustace Oscree is the lord of Coldmoat, and his checky lion flies beside the Weber Spider on every tower and wall."
Dunk's world was spinning slowly all around him. "That potion. He's put me back to sleep."
He closed his eyes and let all the pain drain out of him. He could hear the ravens quirking and screaming at each other, and the sound of his own breath, and something else as well, a softer sound, steady, heavy, somehow soothing.
What's that? He murmured sleepily. That sound.
That? The maester listened. That's just rain. He did not see her till the day they took their leave. This is folly, sir, Septon Sefton complained as Dunk limped heavily across the yard, swinging his splinted foot and leaning on a crutch. Mr. Carrick says you are not half healed as yet, and this rain, you're like to catch a chill. If you do not drown again, at least wait for the rain to stop.
That may be years.
Dunk was grateful to the fat Septon, who had visited him near every day, to pray for him ostensibly, though more time seemed to be taken up with tales and gossip. He would miss his loose and lively tongue and cheerful company, but that changed nothing.
I need to go.
The rain was lashing down around them, 1,000 cold gray whips upon his back. His cloak was already sodden. It was the white wool cloak Sir Eustace had given him, with the green and gold checkered border. The old knight had pressed it on him once again as a parting gift.
For your courage and leal service, sir, he said.
The brooch that pinned the cloak at his shoulder was a gift as well, an ivory spider brooch with silver legs. Clusters of crushed garnets made spots upon its back. I hope this is not some mad quest to hunt down Bennis, Septon Sefton said. You are so bruised and battered that I would fear for you, if that one found you in such a state.
Bennis, Dunk thought bitterly. Bloody Bennis.
While Dunk had been making his stand at the stream, Bennis had tied up Sam Stoops and his wife, ransacked Stand Fast from top to bottom, and made off with every item of value he could find, from candles, clothes and weaponry, to Oscree's old silver cup, and a small cache of coin the old man had hidden in his solar behind a mildewed tapestry. One day Dunk hoped to meet Sir Bennis of the Brown Shield again, and when he did...
Bennis will keep.
Where will you go? The Septon was panting heavily. Even with Dunk on a crutch, he was too fat to match his pace.
Fair Isle, Heron Hall, the Trident. There are hedges everywhere.
He shrugged.
I've always wanted to see the wall.
The wall? The Septon jerked to a stop. I despair of you, Sir Duncan, he shouted, standing in the mud with outspread hands as the rain came down around him. Pray, sir, pray for the crone to light your way. Dunk kept walking. She was waiting for him inside the stables, standing by the yellow bales of hay in a gown as green as summer. Sir Duncan, she said when he came pushing through the door. Her red braid hung down in front, the end of it brushing against her thighs. It is good to see you on your feet.
You never saw me on my back, he thought. My lady, what brings you to the stables? It's a wet day for a ride.
I might say the same to you.
Egg told you. I owe him another clout in the ear.
Be glad he did, or I would have sent men after you to drag you back. It was cruel of you to try and steal away without so much as a farewell. She had never come to see him while he was in Maester Carrick's care, not once.
That green becomes you well, my lady, he said. It brings out the color of your eyes.
He shifted his weight awkwardly on the crutch.
I'm here for my horse.
You do not need to go. There is a place for you here, when you're recovered. Captain of my guards. And Egg can join my other squires. No one need ever know who he is.
Thank you, my lady, but no.
Thunder was in a stall 12 places down. Dunk hobbled toward him. Please reconsider, sir. These are perilous times, even for dragons and their friends. Stay until you've healed. She walked along beside him. It would please Lord Eustace, too. He is very fond of you.
Very fond, Dunk agreed. If his daughter weren't dead, he'd want me to marry her. Then you could be my lady mother. I never had a mother, much less a lady mother.
For half a heartbeat, Lady Rowan looked as though she was going to slap him again.
Maybe she'll just kick my crutch away.
You are angry with me, sir, she said instead. You must let me make amends.
Well, he said, you could help me saddle Thunder.
I had something else in mind. She reached out her hand for his, a freckled hand, her fingers strong and slender.
I'll bet she's freckled all over.
How well do you know horses?
I ride one.
An old destrier bred for battle, slow-footed and ill-tempered, not a horse to ride from place to place.
If I need to get from place to place, it's him or these.
Dunk pointed at his feet. You have large feet, she observed. Large hands as well. I think you must be large all over. Too large for most palfreys. They'd look like ponies with you perched upon their backs. Still, a swifter mount would serve you well. A big courser with some Dornish sand steed for endurance. She pointed to the stall across from Thunder's. A horse like her. She was a blood bay with a bright eye and a long fiery mane. Lady Rowan took a carrot from her sleeves and stroked her head as she took it. The carrot, not the fingers, she told the horse, before she turned again to Dunk. I call her Flame, but you may name her as you please. Call her Amends if you like. For a moment he was speechless. He leaned on the crutch and looked at the blood bay with new eyes. She was magnificent, a better mount than any the old man had ever owned. You had only to look at those long, clean limbs to see how swift she'd be. I bred her for beauty and for speed. He turned back to Thunder. I cannot take her. Why not? She is too good a horse for me. Just look at her. A flush crept up Rowan's face. She clutched her braid, twisting it between her fingers. I had to marry, you know that. My father's will... Oh, don't be such a fool.
What else should I be? I'm thick as a castle wall and bastard-born as well.
Take the horse. I refuse to let you go without something to remember me by.
I will remember you, my lady. Have no fear of that.
Take her. Dunk grabbed her braid and pulled her face to his. It was awkward with the crutch and the difference in their heights. He almost fell before he got his lips on hers. He kissed her hard. One of her hands went around his neck and one around his back. He learned more about kissing in a moment than he had ever known from watching. But when they finally broke apart, he drew his dagger.
I know what I want to remember you by, m'lady.
Egg was waiting for him at the gatehouse, mounted on a handsome new sorrel palfrey and holding Maester's lead. When Dunk trotted up to them on Thunder, the boy looked surprised. She said she wanted to give you a new horse, sir.
Even highborn ladies don't get all they want, Dunk said, as they rode out across the drawbridge. It wasn't a horse I wanted.
The moat was so high it was threatening to overflow its banks.
I took something else to remember her by instead. The lock of that red hair.
He reached under his cloak, brought out the braid, and smiled. In the iron cage at the crossroads, the corpses still embraced. They looked lonely, forlorn. Even the flies had abandoned them, and the crows as well. Only some scraps of skin and hair remained upon the dead men's bones. Dunk halted, frowning. His ankle was hurting from the ride, but it made no matter. Pain was as much a part of knighthood as were swords and shields.
Which way is south?
He asked Egg. It was hard to know when the world was all rain and mud and the sky was gray as a granite wall. That's south, sir, Egg pointed. That's north.
Summerhall is south, your father.
The wall is north. Dunk looked at him.
That's a long way to ride.
I have a new horse, sir.
So you do.
Dunk had to smile.
And why would you want to see the wall?
Well, said Egg, I hear it's tall.